Accession number 19091, Reel 2.
Bill Partis, Reel 2. How did you and your shipmates like sailing in convoys rather than as individuals in the war?
Well, convoys were very slow, and it was a system that I think was probably necessary. But once the Wolfpacks honed in on a convoy, that was it. They stuck with the convoy. Whereas a single ship perhaps had a better chance if it was fast enough to outspeed a submarine. But convoys, and in bad weather, of course, convoys were very dangerous in as much as you had to keep a certain distance from a ship, both at the side and the ahead and astern. And it was very difficult to keep this distance between all ships. Then some would drop out, some would break down, and everything had to slow down for them. The tanker convoys that I was in were somewhat different, in as much as the ships were spread out more, because of if they were torpedoed, then the explosions could affect the others. They were terrific. We had one convoy that almost all the tankers were wiped out. But apart from that, convoys, as I say, you wasted a lot of time waiting to assemble a convoy. But the people who know best, I suppose, they thought that that was the best way to get the goods over from all over the world that we needed in this country in order to survive.
And you said a destroyer would put up a black flag if it was depth charging?
Yeah.
Or you said it might do something else instead of a black flag?
Well, some may have a black ball, but it was just a method, I believe, of letting the convoy know what they were doing.
What do you mean about ball?
Well, you have a ball. When you anchor, you put two black balls up.
On a flag?
No, you put them up. You put them up normally, not on a flag. No, you put them up. You put them up on the mast, or you can put them up on the foredeck, on a flagpole.
And what are the balls made out of?
Oh, well, they're mainly metal. And they're not actual balls as such, but they become a ball when you put them up because they're flapped. And the flaps open up, you know, like you would, you could say a decoration or something. But I believe mainly it was flags.
You mean they're a sphere?
Yeah, you could say that, yeah.
Hanging from a piece of string?
Well, rope.
So you weren't in the Northumberland very long. This was just July 1940.
And nearly all them ships, you've only done the one trip. Because if they had a quick turn round and you leave, you had longer leave than the ship. But I liked the change. I didn't like to keep going on the same ship anyway.
Why was that?
Well, I didn't like them most of the time. They were horrible. So you think, well, I'll have a try another one, and hopefully, I suppose, it would be better. But normally they weren't, they were any worse.
In what way were they so horrible?
Well, it was, I suppose, conditions. And of course, sometimes, if you keep going back to New Zealand, you feel that you want to go somewhere else. So you would change ships to go wherever the ship was going.
Your next ship actually was the Nela.
Yeah, the Nela. I think I joined that in Liverpool because ships weren't sailing out of London then very frequently because of the air raids. And I went up to Liverpool to get a ship. And you had to report every day at the shipping office, and you sat there for a couple of hours, and you would either called or you weren't. And I had to find lodgings up in Liverpool. And sometimes they used to get what they called a pierhead jump, where a member of the crew wouldn't jump the ship. They ran off the ship, but for some, they often used to have an advance in wages through what they called an advance note. And when they got that, they sort of disappeared. And so you were then called upon to take their place. And I think that's what happened with that particular ship. Because I would never have chose to go on it. It was very old. And from what I can recall, we went down South America. So it was an interesting... we went down to Buenos Aires, Montevideo, and... that was the trip we went on that one. But it was uneventful. There wasn't any...
Would you ever come across any Germans in South America?
Not that I would know they were Germans.
And after Nila, you put SS Cristales.
Yeah, she was a banana boat. And we went to the West Indies. And they stopped the bananas. Bananas weren't being... They had more important things to bring over. But the trouble with that ship, we went up to Halifax and it was bitterly cold. Halifax is always cold up in Canada. And the ship was a tropical ship with no heaters. And the rats, we had a lot of rats on this particular ship because of the bananas. And you'd wake up in the night and the things would scurry. They would come under your blanket at the foot. And there were no means of heating. The only way we could heat the room was by having electric lamps, which didn't give off much heat at all. That ship, I believe, was sunk soon after I got off. Another one that I missed. She was sunk. It was thought that we were torpedoed, actually. We had a tremendous bang. It was near the Bay of Biscay. And I did think it was a torpedo that never went off. But you just don't know them things. But I don't know what the bang would have been, but it sounded like a loud bang, but not an explosion.
Was there anything you could do about these rats?
Not really, no. I mean, you've always had rats on ships. When you got into port, you used to put rat guards out. And they were the form of guard on a rope, because the rats used to run up the ropes or down the ropes. They didn't leave the ships, they seemed to come on the ships, different ports you went to. And I suppose having bananas and things, you had lots of spiders, so you had loads of spiders and rats and all kinds of things on them sort of ships.
What about cockroaches?
Yes, you had them in the galley mainly, where you had steam. They seem to like the heat. I know they're quite long things, but never really bothered us to that degree.
Why not?
Well, I suppose we weren't frightened of a cockroach. If you look at the size of a cockroach and a rat, I was a bit more frightened of a rat than a cockroach.
Why were you frightened of the rat?
Well, I don't know whether you've ever been bitten by one, but I haven't, and I don't want to be, but they have got teeth, but cockroaches apparently haven't. Not to the same extent.
Anything else happened on this voyage with Cristales?
No, I don't think, really. I can remember we went to the West Indies and we laid there, and very, very hot. I remember painting the funnel. But that sticks in my memory, but some 50 years ago now, and only certain things will ever really come into your mind.
Now, in April 1941, you joined MV British Resource.
Yeah, that was a tanker. The British Tanker Company had a number of these ships. And I think I was about 8 months on this British Resource. And we carried high octane, mainly from America, New York, out Port Elizabeth, which is just outside of New York. And we made four or five trips to Grangemouth and Milford Haven, where we used to discharge this. The trouble with the tanker, when we got home, we was only home a couple of days. And we always tied up a long way from the shore. Where the town was, we were always out on a jetty miles away, and it was often much too far to walk, so you always seemed to be on the ship. You never seemed to have any time to go ashore. I can remember one particular instance that when I was going ashore and a car came along and we tried to thumb a lift, but it wouldn't stop, it went by. And I thought, well, if it wasn't for people like us, you wouldn't be able to drive that car, because we were had the petrol and it was awful stuff. It's high octane. It used to, when the ship was empty, the gases had laid in the ship, and you had a tremendous amount of rust in the bottom of a tanker where the octane used to eat into it. And you had to go down into the tanks and clean this rust. And after 20 minutes, you were practically drunk. And you had to come up, and they used to give you a tot of rum. So some of the real drinkers, they were always calling to come up, because they ended up drunk with the rum more than the fumes. But they were dangerous ships when they were unloaded. We used to fill the tanks up with water when we had nothing, and used to swim in them.
How did you clean these high octane tanks?
Well, you clean them by hand, because you had a brush and a scraper and you scrape the rust. But after a couple of voyages, you had to change to the thick fuel oil, because you couldn't constantly carry high octane in them because of the effect it had on the steel in the ship.
Because of the corrosive effect.
Mm. Yeah. But they were done. You were underwater most of the time. When you were loaded, you only had a freeboard of about 2 foot. So if you had a little bit of a sea running, you were all washed over. And we lived right in the forecastle. So you had to go across on a bridge, flying bridge, to get anywhere to get to the ship. But they weren't bad ships, because there wasn't a lot of work to do. You couldn't do any work because you were underwater so much, you know. There was no painting and stuff like that that you had on the ordinary ship when you were at sea.
So there were some advantages to being in a tank.
There were some advantages, yeah. Yeah. Unless, of course, you were torpedoed, and there was no advantage at all. You never got off. She sunk with the whole crew, one saved. And the British Resource was sunk by Gunther Prien, I understand. I read it in a book I got from the library, and he sunk the Resource and said at the time that it was a terrible sight, because the flames, you know, they ignited so much you had no chance at all.
What was it like at Grangemouth?
Desolate. Nothing much there. We were well away from anything. They put us right out. They didn't want us near them, actually. Well, I don't blame them, but... So I did leave that. I left that ship in Milford Haven, I believe, sometime.
Can you remember the next ship?
After that one, I think you'll have to jog my memory.
Is it Gloucester?
The Gloucester, yes, that was another ship, which was quite fairly modern for the time. And that was owned by the Federal Steam Navigation, which half of the New Zealand Shipping Company. And I think we went to Australasia, probably on there. New Zealand, Australia.
Did it make much difference which company you were employed by?
To some extent, yes. The bigger companies were generally a bit better than the small companies that had very old ships.
Any memories of your voyage in the Gloucester?
No, I don't really remember too much. I think it was quite a good, quiet voyage.
Now, on the 7th of May 1942, you joined Laguna. Is this a motor vessel?
She wasn't a motor vessel. I believe she was a motor vessel. She was old, owned by the Peninsula Steam Navigation Company. And she was very old, or seemed very old. We lived aft, and we had a terrible propeller noise all the time. We were on top of the propellers. And some of these old ships had a chain steering gear that used to clank and clank. So that was one thing I can remember very about her. But that was the first time I was torpedoed. And we'd had an interesting trip down to Chile, Peru, places that British ships only went twice a year. And it was marvellous, really, because, you know, I'd never seen these sort of places before. Valparaiso. I don't think many ships go there even today. And on the way back through the Windward Passage, it was in the evening, I can remember quite clearly this one, being that it was the first time. And there, I just came off watch, and there was this tremendous explosion. And we were torpedoed. I think we were about the first one to be torpedoed in the convoy. It was only a small convoy. And of course we rushed out. Often the cabin door used to be jammed. So someone thought of an idea of putting in a panel that you could kick out easy, which would be help. But we got up on deck. Went up on the boat deck. And when you've been torpedoed, the funny thing is everything after the bang goes deathly quiet. You just hear the waves sort of lapping against the side of the ship. And we lowered the lifeboats. There were four of us, stopped aboard, lowered the lifeboats. Even the captain, he went. Less said about him, the better. And after a while, they found that the ship wasn't going to sink, but we were right low down in the water, and the crew came back. We slowly made our way, I think it was Guatemala. It was in the West Indies, and we were there for nearly a month.
What was it like in the ship, in the boat, well, once you'd evacuated the ship?
The ship itself was a 60-foot hole in the port side, which had been blown. I think it was in number three hold, so had it been in the engine room, of course that would have been it. You never survive in an engine room. But we had barrels of cotton in that hold, and that saved us. It kept the ship afloat, and the cotton barrels, of course, must have taken some of the explosion. And they put cement blocks in the ship, and we made our way to Galveston in Texas.
Why did they put cement blocks in the ship?
Well, that was to hold the sea from too much. You had so much weight, the ship was already down by the head, you see, because the weight of the water that had already come in. And they had a method, they'd done this with a lot of ships, I believe, that they put a cement block to hold it, and that's all it would hold, you know. So we made progress to Galveston, leaving behind a we still had a hole. I mean, they only put part of this thing in. We still lost a lot of cotton. We had a trail of cotton, and how we were never picked up and torpedoed again, I don't know.
So the ship must have been more or less unsinkable then?
With the cotton in, yeah. But we were very low down in the water, but we were kept afloat. We made it into Galveston.
And what, had there been any casualties aboard?
No. Nobody, no. No, at the time, the blast must have been absorbed somewhat by the type of cargo that we had. I believe in the afterhold and some of the lower hold, we had a lot of phosphates, which, of course, are very heavy. As you know, they're very heavy, and had it been one of them holds, it would have perhaps been a different story. But we lay within dry dock in Galveston where they got the cargo out. It was a long job and very noisy because we had the riveting hammers going night and day, and if you would put a rivet in, the echoes right the way through the ship, right through your bunk. And we had, I think it was a couple of months we must have laid down with that. And then we made our way home to Liverpool.
Did you have any particular experiences ashore in Texas?
Well, we never had a lot of money. This was the trouble, you see. We weren't overpaid. And it's entirely up to the captain how much money that they advanced you. And it wasn't very much. It was only a few dollars that we could get. But we used to go in a bar and have a drink, and we survived, you know, that time. There wasn't much to do. But the strange thing about it was that a ship that had been torpedoed, and when we was in dock and came out of dock, and we laid for a long while, we were over the side of the ship chipping off rust, which was... Really, it doesn't make sense at all, you know. You always had, and a ship, you used to have little hammers, pointed hammers, that you chip the paint away, the old paint that you would chip it before painting. Because the crew used to paint their own ships abroad, and when they get over here, it's done by the shore people.
What was the problem with this captain?
Well, there were two captains of the same name. One was, we had the worst one, Bully Grant, they called him, and he was the one that, at the Lancashire Hot Pot, that he seemed to think that we should live on. But, no, he was a man who was just very, very grumpy. I mean, he must be long dead now, because 50 years ago he was about 50, so he must be gone now. Like most of them on in that particular time. But I arrived home, and that was my first experience. And as I've said before, that when you get torpedoed, your leave starts, well, that didn't apply in this case, your leave starts, 28 days leave you had when you were torpedoed, and then your leave starts from when you get torpedoed. So if you take a month getting home, you're all ready to go back again. Most unfair, really.
You've got in your discharge book, 22nd of December 1942, arrived to Liverpool.
Yeah. Yeah. They gave me £20, the Shipping Federation, prize money. And I've never really figured out why. Which was quite a bit of money them days. I mean, it was nearly 2 months' wages. Yeah, they sent me £20, and I often wondered why, but...
Perhaps because the ship wasn't lost?
Possibly, but £20, it didn't seem much for a ship, did it? But the world was a different place then, I mean. You can't compare anything with today, really.
And then in 43 you went back to sea. Pacific... Grove, is it called?
Pacific Grove, yes, that was my first ship that was sunk. She was a motor vessel, quite a modern ship, one of the best ships I'd ever been in. And we went to New York, and then went up to Halifax, where we picked up a convoy. And we had 12 women, or 11 women passengers aboard, Canadians, that were coming home on the, on our ship. They had married British pilots that were training in Canada, and they were coming home to England, which was, as it turned out, fortunate for me. I remember coming off watch. It could have been round about midnight. Getting into my bunk, fortunately fully clothed, and then there was this tremendous bang. It's a noise that, unless you've heard it, you will never imagine. It's terrific, because the ship, being of steel, it echoes right the way through. And we had a job then to get on deck. There were six of us in a room, cabin. And when we got on deck, the sight that greeted us was the whole ship with a blaze amidships. And we let some rafts go. We couldn't get up on the boat deck. The ship, the lifeboat had been let go on one side. But they were self-releasing boats. So when you put them in the water, if you took the weight off the pool, they would release themselves. And they weren't lowered by a seaman. I don't know who lowered them, but this one boat had these women in, which was fortunate for me. I could see no way off the boat. An American escort, I think they hadn't long been in the war, opened fire, and tracer bullets came across from the horizon, because the attack was on the surface. It was a surface attack at night. And so I jumped over off the stern into the water, and it was very, very cold. It hit me, but I was fit. I was fortunate. The sea took me away from the ship, and I was picked up by a lifeboat with all these women. I took charge of the boat, and fortunately it wasn't a boat with the ordinary oars to row the boat. It had this system of levers where you would turn the propeller so that people could easily use them. And I pulled away from the boat, and it was a sight that I should never forget. The whole ship was ablaze. We had locomotives on deck. They were white hot. The wires broke and the locomotive ran backwards into the sea, and all the steam came up and the ship slid away stern first. And everything then went deathly quiet. Star shells were being put up by the convoy, and slowly the convoy disappeared and we were left in the boat. I was very wet, very cold. A lady gave me a drop of whiskey, which she had, which was fortunate. I took a little drop of this stuff, and I sat by the tiller, and I sat there for hours and hours, and I lost all sense of time. Late the next day, it was saw a corvette, and there was also a raft near us with a chap on the raft, and he looked like a submarine, actually, and so the corvette seemed to be very reluctant to come too close. But eventually we got to the corvette was called the Azalea. And we got to the corvette. I had great difficulty.